Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. The Chinese invasion of Vietnam's northern regions is now in its sixth day, and there no longer seem to be any signs that it will end quickly. Both sides appear to be bringing in reinforcements in anticipation of heavier fighting still ahead. Japan has offered to mediate, apparently in fear of a long war. And now there are reports in Tokyo, strictly unconfirmed, that Soviet Russia has begun mobilizing troops along the Chinese border. As we hear from Bruce Dunning, Japanese military authorities also say they have received reports of non-commissioned officers being mobilized and military hardware stockpiled along Mongolia's frontier with China.
The Mongolian People's Republic is a close ally of the Soviet Union, but it has a 2,500-mile border with China. The Japanese authorities would not say how or from where they received these reports, and they added they did not know whether the troops involved were Mongolian or Soviet. Japanese reporters in Hanoi now report that China and Vietnam appear headed for a major showdown battle. Vietnam reportedly is moving some regular army units to the fighting front, and China reportedly is reinforcing its fighting units with men and weapons. Vietnam's Vice Foreign Minister Nguyen Co Thach accused China of wanting to conquer all of Vietnam, and he further charged that the United States and Japan are encouraging the Chinese invasion. Radio Hanoi quoted Thach as saying, "By attacking first and speaking of negotiation afterward, China is repeating Lyndon Johnson's trick in ordering the bombing of North Vietnam in 1965. Bruce Dunning, CBS News, Tokyo.
The Soviet press this morning made a strong personal attack on President Carter, taking issue with remarks about Southeast Asia contained in his speech in Atlanta day before yesterday. The Soviet news agency TASS notes that the speech contained no condemnation of China, and it says Mr. Carter tried to present the Chinese invasion of Vietnam as the result of prior events in Cambodia. TASS calls this nothing but an effort to justify Chinese aggression. The Soviet Union is maintaining its propaganda campaign against China, but CBS News Moscow correspondent Bernard Redmond tells us that both officially and privately, Soviet sources give no inkling of what moves the Kremlin may have in store to help its Vietnamese ally. Moscow has already said it will honor its treaty commitments, but whether this will go beyond moral support and an increased role as arms supplier to Vietnam, Redmond says, is unclear. Concerning Washington's attitude at this point, we'll hear now from CBS News diplomatic correspondent Marvin Kalb.
Ever since normalizing relations with China, the U.S. has maintained it is going to follow a balanced, fair, essentially even-handed approach to both Russia and China, the two feuding communist giants. This policy is now being tested. When China invaded Vietnam last weekend, the U.S. considered postponing Treasury Secretary Blumenthal's visit to Peking as one sign of administration displeasure. But as of now, the Blumenthal visit is still on. The secretary is scheduled to leave for Peking tomorrow. Yet last year, when the Soviet Union cracked down on internal dissidents, staged the Sharansky trial, arrested an American businessman and in general, kicked up a Cuban storm in Africa, the U.S. postponed a series of high-level U.S. visits to Moscow as a sign of American displeasure with Russian policy. Is there an inconsistency here, the U.S. seeming to be tougher on Russia than on China? U.S. officials argue no, Blumenthal wants to be in Peking when the U.S. embassy formally opens on March 1st, a symbolic action, and according to one official, there could be a lot of business between China and the U.S. In addition, officials say the U.S. even-handed approach remains in force, and proof is the U.S. criticism of China's attack on Vietnam. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
The United States has been trying to promote a meeting of the UN Security Council on the situation in Southeast Asia, but so far without success. CBS News UN correspondent Richard C. Hontalet reports that the United States wants the council to register concern and thereby, perhaps, move the parties to greater restraint. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General David Jones, goes to Capitol Hill today for a closed-door session with the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Phil Jones tells us about it.
Today's meeting comes as a result of a suggestion by conservative Senator Jesse Helms that a Pentagon document exists indicating that the Joint Chiefs recommended normalization with mainland China only if Taiwan received certain sophisticated weapons and only if the Peking government made a specific promise not to use force to take Taiwan. Helms says he wants to know if the members of the Joint Chiefs were consulted before the president made his decision to normalize relations with the mainland, and if the Joint Chiefs did in fact make any stipulations. However, this line of questioning is not expected to alter the committee's plans to approve a somewhat vaguely written amendment dealing with the security of Taiwan. The ranking members of the committee have already agreed on language which would state that any Peking attack on Taiwan would be viewed by the U.S. with grave concern. Authors of this amendment say their purpose is not to pledge the U.S. to war over Taiwan, but the senators say their amendment will get the message to Peking, and that message is, if the Chinese government wants normalization with the U.S. to develop, then the Taiwan issue must be settled peacefully. Phil Jones, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Revised figures on the gross national product in the last quarter of 1978 are being released today in Washington. The preliminary figures made public last month by the Commerce Department indicated an unexpectedly strong growth of 6.1% in the fourth quarter. American Marine Sergeant Kenneth Krause, who was set free yesterday after 6 days in the hands of Iranian guerrillas, left for home this morning aboard an emergency evacuation flight. Before he departed, Krause talked about his ordeal with CBS newsman Larry Doyle.
I didn't know if they were alive, if I was the only one left. I didn't know what was going on. No phone calls, no messages. And Friday morning early, before the sun came up, I was taken to a revolutionary prison where they keep all kinds of prisoners from back months ago, Savak and et cetera. They have everybody in there. And I was kept there in the lower bottom and just kept quiet. I could never make a phone call. I could never go anywhere. I couldn't talk to anybody. And just yesterday, I got to write a letter out to my fiance and my mom, and they said they'd mail it. I doubt if they mailed it, but I wrote it anyway.
What kind of thoughts went through your mind in that week when you were in the prison?
I had every thought you could imagine. You know, I thought I was going to be dead, and then I thought, no, why shoot me, you know? And I was thinking about home. I thought about the United States, and I thought about, I wanted to go home, that's all, you know.
When Sergeant Krause got to the steps of the plane this morning, he turned to an Iranian guard escorting him and said, "Can I go now?" The guard said, "Okay." Ayatollah Khomeini's revolutionary government has announced plans for a national referendum 2 weeks from now, in which the sole question will be, in place of a monarchy, do you favor an Islamic republic? Given the turbulent nature of events in Iran following the departure of the Shah, there seems little doubt what the answer will be. Reports from Iran's border with Iraq say a pitched battle took place there last night between Khomeini supporters and Kurdish separatists. More than 100 people are said to have been killed. It was the first known attack of such size against Khomeini's new regime. An important vote is coming up today in the California legislature. Gaylord Walker of station KFBK in Sacramento tells us about it.
A final vote is expected later today on a resolution to put California on the side of those calling for a constitutional convention to balance the federal budget. The proposal has received the strong and at times fanatic backing of Governor Brown. The governor appeared before the State Assembly Ways and Means Committee earlier this month to lobby for the resolution. He mentioned the federal balanced budget issue in his inaugural address in January and has placed all his influence and power behind it. But still it appears a close vote in the Assembly Committee. Top Brown aides are quick to point out that the vote today is just one step in the governor's continuing fight to balance the federal budget, and even if he loses, the fight will continue. A fight not only to balance the federal budget, but also to gain additional political power for an expected 1980 presidential bid. Gaylord Walker for CBS News, Sacramento.
The police officers' strike in New Orleans is now 6 days old, and the city has turned down a union pay increase proposal that might have ended the walkout. The city Civil Service Commission rejected it late last night, saying a 15% raise it already had approved was sufficient. This morning, a new complication. New Orleans garbage collectors have decided to honor police picket lines at sanitation facilities. The business agent for Teamsters Local 260, which represents the sanitation workers, says they're individually honoring police picket lines all over the city. The British Caribbean island of St. Lucia became independent at midnight. Princess Alexandra, a cousin of Queen Elizabeth, handed over the island's new constitution, and a British warship fired a 21-gun salute.